like they didn't hit anything other than military targets. My hope is this is the end.
The U.S. had warned Israel not to hit Iran's nuclear and oil sites amid fear of sparking a wider war and economic ripple effect throughout the world. ABC News national security and defense analyst Mick Mulroy says Iran downplayed the attack, but we don't know if Iran or Israel will strike again.
The biggest concern is it could spread to an all-out, nonstop confrontation between Iran and Israel, which would be bad for the region, if not the whole world.
On the campaign trail, Vice President Kamala Harris heading to Michigan today, and former First Lady Michelle Obama will join her for a rally. Former President Trump was in Michigan last night. He'll hold an event in New York City tonight. Election Day now 10 days away. This is ABC News. Rapper Lil Durk facing murder for higher charges. The 32-year-old arrested by U.S. Marshals in Florida Thursday, now being held without bond. Here's ABC's Ike Ajachi.
The Chicago-based artist, born Durk Banks, is known for his Grammy-winning song, All My Life.
All my life.
Collaborations with Drake and country artist Morgan Wallen. The arrest comes on the heels of a federal indictment against five alleged co-conspirators of Durk's, also arrested Thursday in Chicago. They're accused of carrying out a 2022 hit targeting rapper Quando Rondo in Los Angeles, which left Rondo's 24-year-old cousin dead.
Following a tropical storm in northwestern Philippines, the number of dead and missing and massive flooding and landslides rising to nearly 130. The Philippine president says some areas are still cut off. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
The John and Gordy Show.
From Substack, we have Mike McCabe in the studio. It's the McDonald's appearance. Now we're going to have a presidential candidate go to McDonald's and serve up fries at a go window. You know, the restaurant's closed, you know, and he rehearsed it.
Ridiculous. And the customers were actors.
Yes.
So did he stand at the drive-up window and say, do you want lies with that?
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Donald Trump was in the great state of Michigan, my birth state, and he insulted Detroit.
Our whole country will end up being like Detroit if she's your president.
You're in Detroit, man! I would tell you, sir, we would only be so lucky if we had the mentality of people trying to do better for their cities, for small businesses moving in. There's a renaissance going on in the city of Detroit.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Wisconsin has one of the higher closure rates in the U.S. for charter schools. A new report lays out the challenges. Here's Mike Moen.
Charter schools, which receive public funding but are often run by private entities, are billed as alternative learning environments for families who feel they need more options. But the new findings show nationally, more than a quarter of them close by year five, with rates worsening over time. Wisconsin is among the states with a closure rate of at least 45%. Jenny Hofschulte of the Wisconsin Public Education Network says families enrolled are less scrambling when a charter school abruptly closes.
That's 45% of those families put into a lurch and having to make pivots and new choices for their children.
The report from the National Center for Charter School Accountability cites low enrollment, along with fraud and mismanagement, as the top factors behind the closures. Backers of charters say despite these issues, these schools are sometimes still the best options in underserved areas. Hofschulte acknowledges some families might be happy with their charter school, but adds the push to authorize these sites over time ignores the root issues that hinder educational outcomes.
When you look at student outcomes, like, poverty plays the biggest role in it, but we're not talking about how to address poverty in communities. We're saying, like, well, it must be the public school system, so we'll do this other thing, you know, a charter will be better.
The Milwaukee public school system recently dealt with a financial scandal. Hofschulte says that shouldn't be taken lightly, but she suggests those examples are scrutinized more than the shortcomings of charter schools. According to state data, Wisconsin currently has 226 charter schools in operation. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, highs in the mid to upper 50s. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 33. Sunny Sunday, highs around 63. Warmer on Monday, breezy as well, a high near 70 degrees. And even warmer Tuesday, windy back to the low 80s.
It's 51 at our studios.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we start our What Makes Wisconsin Great tour with Trinity Olson of the Lincoln Project and Reed Galen of the Union. Get on the road with us next time.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Kripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here is today's episode. Hello, everybody. We got a very, very special live taping of the Kripescast coming up for you. This is all about big issues this election cycle. This is, you've heard it many places, and this year it's actually true. This election is probably going to be the most consequential for your life in several different ways. And so we just wanted to give you an episode to inform you on the issues, make the best choice you can. The fellow I'm talking to, given that I think, you know, journalism as a whole, it's hard to get like real good, unbiased information. I wanted to bring on Mike Wagner, who's been on the podcast before. We did a live Kripescast a couple years ago. I thought it was great. He is the director of the Center of Communication Civic Renewal and the director of graduate studies at UW-Madison. His whole thing is journalism, coming from an unbiased perspective, giving you as much information as you can so you can make the most informed choice that you can. And we had a good time. We had some beers and let the audience ask questions too. So we got a good mix of things in this podcast for you. I think you're going to enjoy it. Now, before you're like, oh my gosh, we're talking about politics, I'm turning this off. Just, I know politics has that effect on a lot of people, especially right now. But we're really trying to just dive into the issues here. Whatever way you go, this is a podcast that's meant for people on both sides, because it's really just, we're talking about the issues. We're focusing on the things that are happening, not one politician or another politician. So just, if you can, try and keep an open mind. And if you hear something where you're like, that's wrong, let us know. Email us, kripescast@gmail.com, and we'll bring it up on the next podcast this coming week. We're going to do another episode just like this at Vivarium in Milwaukee. You can even come. You can get tickets. And all the proceeds are going to be donated, by the way. And we'll let you make your voice known, and we can discuss that issue. And that's the whole point of this, is that we just all keep an open mind. We have a healthy discussion, because I think what's going wrong in society, generally speaking, or what I've seen with my friends, is that nobody wants to talk about politics anymore. Nobody wants to have genuine conversations. And then what happens is the loudest, most extreme, most obnoxious voices get platforms. And then people are like, I guess that's our option, you know, and that doesn't have to be the way. So we're just trying to bring in more conversation. And get out there and vote. That's really the big thing that matters. Just you making your voice heard. That's how democracy is done well. So get on out there, vote, and tell your polling worker I says hi. Also, folks, I'm going to be on the road this week. I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm in York, Glenside, Wilkes-Barre. It's going to be a fun set of shows. Come on out and see me if you're in Pennsylvania. And also, we're still raising money for Doctors Without Borders. Checking them out, doctorswithoutborders.org. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with Mike Wagner. All right, are you guys ready to welcome to the stage Mike Wagner? Give him a big round of applause. Get him up here, ladies and gentlemen. So I got to ask you a question. How are you feeling about the last time you were here? I talked a lot of crap about the Vikings. I did. And I'm not sorry about that, but I am sorry you guys are doing so well this year. So,
you know, good football teams don't have a history of losing to the Detroit Lions, which the Vikings just did on Sunday.
And I was kindly not going to bring that up.
I appreciate that.
I did. I was rooting for the Lions. I like the Lions more than any other team in the NFC North because they've really suffered through a lot. You know, do we have any Lions fans in the audience? All right. You hear that? Do we have any Bears fans in the audience? But okay. Find a Lions fan. They have a used paper bag that you guys can wear. I know you think your season's going okay now, but wait a couple weeks, all right? Yeah. Mike, can you kind of give people your background and sort of, you know, I know Indiana is in your past, UW, the other red and white, but let everyone know kind of your deal here.
Yeah, so I'm a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication here at the UW. Before that, I was a professor at Nebraska. I also got my undergraduate degree in Nebraska, PhD at Indiana. So all the red and white Big Ten schools is my standard joke. Tried the rest at the best, that kind of thing. I've been a reporter and worked on political campaigns before I did all of that stuff. And so I've been around politics and elections and the news my whole life. And now I study it and teach students about it.
That's awesome. Now, just to give you guys a sense of how this is going to go tonight, I have in my pocket some questions, okay? But if you guys have any questions, Colleen Maraca, my producer.
And my former student.
And your former student. Give her a big round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Colleen Maraca, I don't know where she is. But if you do have a question throughout the course of this, raise your hand, and we'll try to plug those in here, too. And if we don't get any hands raised, I'll just ask you at the end if you have any. So feel free to jump in at any time, but let's hop into this. So first thing, like, what do you think are the biggest issues people should be paying attention to this election season?
It is a really important one. I mean, it's always something you hear, this election's the most important election of your lifetime, and most times that's not true. It's something that we say to try to encourage people to pay attention and show up to vote. But in this particular case, lots of really important things are on the ballot at the federal level and at the state level and even at the local level. And so we have democracy itself in many ways being on the ballot. We have reproductive rights on the ballot. We have questions about immigration on the ballot. We have a president who's going to inherit a war in Ukraine and a war in Gaza and other places that are simmering around both of those places and other places. And so it's a pretty consequential time to be paying careful attention about what it is we're going to do. And so those are all big issues right now. Inflation, I suppose, is another one. So how we spend our money and how far it goes, how safe we're going to be, how safe the rest of the world's going to be, what rights do we have with our own body, and are we going to live in a country that respects the outcome of elections? Those are the big things, I would say.
All right. Well, yeah, that's no shortage of issues there, my guy. No, well, I think the one thing that they always say people vote on is the economy. And the U.S. economy, you know, I mean, you see the stock market, it goes up. I mean, it's had a couple down days, but it's by and large up. And yet still inflation is high. It's hard for people to get groceries. Like, how are we balancing those two things? Is this just the widening gap between the rich and the poor? Is it tech stocks are supporting the general drive of the S&P and the NASDAQ and everything?
Wow. Well done.
Did I just ask a question and then answer it? That is terrible. Terrible.
I would say, you know, we're still recovering in some ways from COVID and all the things that happened to the supply chain globally, which affected inflation globally. And so that wasn't just a U.S. problem. We recovered faster than almost everywhere else. But we're not all feeling it in the same way, largely on the backs of income inequality and some of these other issues you were raising. And so, you know, economic change is slow. It takes us a long time to feel it when things start to get better. It takes most of us, you know, a long time to feel it because we're not super wealthy. And, you know, those of us who are Midwest cheap feel this as it comes, you know, a little bit later.
Yeah, and so you have both candidates out there, Harris and Trump, saying that their economic plan is going to be better for the rest of us. What do the economists, what do the experts say about this situation?
So economists are also kind of polarized like the country. And so some are really pushing tax cuts for the most advantaged of us. Most economic forecasts and most economic predictions about the two plans say that Harris's is probably on balance a little bit better for the middle class. Neither economic plan is very good for the very poor, and Trump's is better for the very wealthy.
Got it. Okay. Now, we always hear about, like, the debt, the national debt, you know, and, like, how we got to pay that down, and none of us are going to have Social Security. By the way, you guys should really save your money for that whole situation. We're screwed, all right? That's what I've taken away. But, I mean, is there any hope, or is it just, like, climate change where, like, we're just going to ignore it and then have a bunch of financial hurricanes and be like, ah, it's the weather.
As a college professor, I've noticed that, you know, many students often wait. I tell them they're under no obligation to wait until the night before to start their assignment, but many do. And that's how we often are as a country when it comes to trying to solve big problems like climate change, where if we do the stuff now, the politicians who made us do it will not benefit because we'll have to pay more money and things will be frustrating and the benefit will come in 20 years. And so politicians want to do things where the benefit is in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months. And so to save Social Security, to roll back the problems of climate change requires politicians to look forward in a way that they tend not to. And one reason that they don't is that we reward people who give us stuff now, not people who give us stuff later.
Yeah, it's really interesting because if you look at you know, we hear that Democrats are better for the environment. Is that true in terms of our use of fossil fuels? Have Democrats done enough on the environment that people who are curious about the environment or that's their main voting issue that they have reason to keep voting for Democrats?
I would say they've done more than Republicans when it comes to regulating fossil fuels, trying to find creative ways to find alternative energies, trying to find ways to make it less economically advantageous to burn oil for all the things that we burn oil for. But I think even most Democrats would say, no, they haven't done enough. You know, as the current president liked to say when he was still running for president, don't compare me to the almighty, compare me to the alternative. And so his view was we're doing more than the other side, but that's not a great slogan. We're slightly better than the other side is not a thing that motivates most of us to want to show up and do something.
And is there a way to change sort of that general thing about politicians only caring about like the next few months? Like, and does this come down largely to like money in politics? I mean, you've got the lobbying that goes on with Congress, like a lot of times big businesses don't really care if it's a Democrat or Republican running. They know they can go to K Street and bribe the shit out of them, and everything's going to be okay, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the top givers of kind of, you know, political action money to both parties, and it's the same, roughly the same groups that are near the top of that list who just give to both sides. And then some are more ideological in their giving. And so money definitely matters. That's one reason this is the case. But, you know, another reason that is the case is just that change is hard. Most humans don't love change. It's hard to try to persuade folks to take a big risk on things. And sometimes the consequences are huge. You think about times when there were huge changes. So, you know, the beginning and end of the Civil War, where there were lots of huge changes around that. Or the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. Like, those things came with huge consequences. The red state, blue state map of the United States changed completely over a course of two decades after the passing of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. So some of these things have catastrophic or outstanding, depending upon your point of view, consequences for both political parties and the people that they represent.
Got it. And in terms of the money in politics, let's just look at the money in this election cycle. I think you have a bunch of things going on. Both Democrats and Republicans have spent hundreds of millions of dollars. I think it's over a billion. That
one and a half
spent.
Billion.
One yeah, and a half at least, billion yeah. dollars that we've funneled into TV ads. Hey, do you guys like those TV ads? Who does it serve, you know?
Charlie Baron says he's funny, but is he really?
Is he really? I think he's a hack comedian. Don't go see his show. You guys didn't see that ad because you're all here. I mean, they must work. Do they work, the political ads?
They do a few things. So negative ads, things that make us afraid, tend to make us search out for more information, right? So like you walk out on State Street and you hear rustling in the leaves, you pay some attention to it. If it's a person walking, you keep walking. If it's a large snake, you start paying attention to that and start to, oh, maybe I've got to be faster than Charlie so I can get around this snake, right? And so we negative ads make us attuned to negative ads make us attuned to scary things, right? And they make us search for information, and they also can sometimes make you abandon your partisanship when you vote. Like, if you know nothing else about a person, knowing which political party they favor, even if they barely favor it, you're picking who they vote for correctly 9.5 times out of 10. But a negative ad is one of those things that can get you to say, oh, maybe I need to learn about something else. Or they just make you hopeless and anxious and so upset that you decide not to participate anyway. So there's two ways that they're effective, neither of which are great for democracy, but they're effective.
And do you think that the idea, obviously all these ads, the way they got all this money is typically super PACs, right? Are pumping out a lot of these in the campaigns?
Super PACs or just very, very wealthy individuals who want to participate privately, basically now, can do so. So there's lots of ways that money in politics can happen kind of outside of our view in ways that we can't observe as directly as we could in the past when there were sharper and more stringent restrictions on how people could give.
Yeah, I don't get, because for a long time it was like you can't, if you're a corporation, you cannot donate more than X amount to a political candidate, or you can't donate, I forget exactly what.
Yeah, they
had
limits to how much you could give a candidate, to how much you could give a party, all that sort of thing.
But then they said, hey, if we just do this thing called like a super PAC, then you can donate millions and millions of dollars. Tax deductible, by the way.
And we won't know that it was you.
And you won't know
in many cases.
But like, does anybody in this audience want that?
No.
I don't. And I don't think it's just, you know, here. I feel like if you asked any audience that nobody would want that. So why is it the case that that's the deal?
Well, one reason is politicians are risk averse, right? So we could try to persuade some folks to say, hey, stop trying to raise all of this money and run for office. And they'll say, oh, I would love to do that in an environment where my opponent airs 1,000 negative ads about me and I do nothing. Look at me losing with my principles. I'll go off and write, you know, my hit song, Alone With My Principles, which is a line from that thing you do.
Yeah, no, I caught that reference.
Yeah.
That
I wanted to
cool.
cite my source. I didn't want someone later to be like, you stole that joke. So, you know, but, you know, politicians are not incentivized to experiment with not doing what they know works. And so unless both sides have to do it, it's very unlikely to happen.
Got it. And so is there any way that you think, like, could be a pathway? Like, I'm seeing a lot of hopeless faces out there, Mike. We got to give them something. Where's the hope in all this?
Well, you know, one path are the courts. I think the U.S. Supreme Court is not a likely path to change these things.
They're all getting bribed, too. You know, all of them.
But in state politics, state Supreme Courts also can weigh in on some of these issues with races, you know, that are more local. And so that might be a path to begin trying to roll back some of this. Also, some of it might just be rewarding politicians who speak out about these things. You know, you know, McCain-Feingold is the name of the campaign finance reform bill that's probably the most famous. And, you know, one of those persons has passed away and the other is no longer in the Senate. No one has picked up that mantle in a really serious way.
Yeah. And we're also seeing it just getting more in your face. Like Elon Musk is doing this thing where he's giving away $100 to anyone to sign a petition to get someone. And then he's also giving away $1 million to one random person every single day. He's essentially, in my mind, buying some votes, you know, but he found a little loophole. And so now it's like, yeah, no, that's legal-ish, you know. And but what is your take on the Elon Musk thing? Because that feels like pretty in your face. You know?
Yeah, I would say that's one of the things that's in a long list of things that are legal and horrible.
OK. All right. Well, there you have it, folks. Legal and horrible. yeah, give a big round of applause for legal and horrible. That's good. Let's talk about immigration. That's obviously one of the big issues that is on everybody's mind. And I think Democrats and Republicans will agree immigration is an issue that has to be addressed. Is Kamala Harris as bad at immigration as Republicans paint her to be?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think, you know, we have roughly, we think, 11 million people here who ought not be here legally. But about 8 million of them, by the best estimates, are working jobs that American citizens largely don't want to work. And so if we took out 4 to 8% of our workforce immediately, that would have catastrophic effects on our economy. And so there are practical reasons to kind of keep things as they are in some way or another. But it's also the case that, you know, lots of folks are breaking the law and coming to the country in ways that they ought not come to the country and are coming in ways that are illegal. And the Biden administration has not been as aggressive about policing that as the Trump administration was.
Do you see that as sort of Harris will say, well, we got a bill together that going through Congress, but did they act on that as, you know, quickly as they should have, or why did they wait so long to get that bill going?
Harris is telling the truth about this on the campaign trail, which is that many Republican lawmakers were inclined to support this immigration bill that was somewhat bipartisan, and former President Trump asked Republicans not to support it because it's really the main issue that he talks about on the campaign trail. That's a political issue, and so that's how he started running in 2016. That's what he ran on in 2020, and that's what he's running on in 2024. And so he wanted that issue and didn't want the bill to pass, and enough of his Republican colleagues went along with that.
And how much of, you know, what they're saying is true with, like, the border crossings during Trump's time versus the border crossings?
It's more now, yeah. The best estimates I've seen showed about a drop of about a million undocumented immigrants at near the end of the Trump administration, so over the course of his term, as compared to the Biden administration, where that number went back up to a little over 11 million.
So you have hard facts there that Trump could say, I'm better with immigration enforcement, but then why...
Well, he could at least say there were fewer people here illegally. He could say that.
He can say that. But why not just say that instead of going to, like, they're eating the cats, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the geese. He was out there saying, what happened to the geese, you know? There's just a bunch of hunters hiding their shotguns. Like, I don't know. That was the Haitians, I'll tell you that much. Sure as wasn't me. Joe, they're on to us. Get the decoys out of the water.
Look, I think the truth about Donald Trump is that one of his greatest skills is directing our attention toward what he wants it to be on, and not what other people, especially his opponents, would like it to be on. And so when he does something that's starting to get negative attention and it looks like it might stick, they're eating the cats is the kind of thing that we start to hear. And we all gobble it up. We share the memes, news reporters cover it, and all of a sudden we're not talking about the thing that we were talking about before. He's very good at changing the subject. And I view it as a way of just trying to change the subject so that he doesn't have to deal with the thing that's been harder for him.
Got it. But then you have, like, sort of a doubling down. Who came up with the dog cat situation? Like, where did that come from? Who started it?
To the best we can tell, there were some neighborhood conversations where people might have shared this idea.
Next door app?
It might have been. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because everything on there is true as shit.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Take it to the bank. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so once something like that gets a little bit of a life on social media, then political leaders who know it's probably not true and journalists who know that it's probably not true have a license to say, many people are talking about, and then insert weird thing here, right? In this case, many people are saying that immigrants in Shelbyville, Ohio, were eating cats, or Springfield, Ohio, are eating cats. And so, no, many people are not saying that. One person said it, and many people shared it, which is a different thing.
Todd, you know, who went to the gas station and was like, are those Delta 8s legal? Took three of them and was like, I saw them eating cats out there, you know? Saul from Delta 8, guys. Just legalize weed, all right? That Delta 8 is poison. It's poison. How do you think the McDonald's thing is going to translate?
I think, like most things in American politics, people that don't like Trump will say, boy, I bet he didn't want to get asked about the minimum wage, and I bet he wouldn't be able to, you know, make the change and things like that. And people like Trump say, look at that, a man of the people, taking some time out. People see what they want to see and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it is kind of one of those deals. A big thing everybody's talking about this election is that the bros are going to decide it. It's a bro election. Have you guys heard that? No? Okay. Well, it's what they're saying. Many people are saying.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Following Israel's military response to Iran's missile attack, President Biden spoke to reporters on the tarmac in Philadelphia, saying it appears Israel's operation was tempered.
Looks like they didn't hit anything other than military targets. My hope is this is the end.
The U.S. had warned Israel not to hit Iran's nuclear and oil sites amid fear of sparking a wider war and economic ripple effect throughout the world. ABC News national security and defense analyst Mick Mulroy says Iran downplayed the attack, but we don't know if Iran or Israel will strike again.
The biggest concern is it could spread to an all-out, nonstop confrontation between Iran and Israel, which would be bad for the region, if not the whole world.
On the campaign trail, Vice President Kamala Harris heading to Michigan today, and former First Lady Michelle Obama will join her for a rally. Former President Trump was in Michigan last night. He'll hold an event in New York City tonight. Election Day now 10 days away. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose their home opener. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks started out hot, but could not keep up with the Bulls, losing 133-122. Chicago's Kobe White scoring 35 points. Bucks head coach Doc Rivers after the loss.
That was a disappointing game from us, but give them credit. Like, they shot the heck out of the ball. They played hard. They had more endurance than us. You can see that through the game. So give them a lot of credit.
The Bucks head east to play the Nets tomorrow night. College football, Wisconsin hosts number 3 ranked Penn State tonight in Madison. The Badgers 6.5-point underdogs. Baseball, the Dodgers with a 6-3 win in 10 innings over the Yankees in game one. Freddie Freeman with the first walk-off grand slam in World Series history.
Those are the kind of things when you're 5 years old with your two older brothers and you're playing football in the backyard, and those are the scenarios you kind of dream about. Base loaded, 2 outs in a World Series game, and for it to actually happen and hit a home run and walk it off, that's as good as it gets right there.
That's the Dodgers' Freddie Freeman. Game two tonight in L.A. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is an important announcement for Wisconsinites who plan to vote in the November 2024 election. Leading nonpartisan economists have analyzed the economic plans of Donald Trump and concluded that he would cause inflation.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Sunshine today, highs in the mid to upper 50s. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 33. Sunny Sunday, highs around 63. Warmer on Monday, breezy as well, a high near 70 degrees. And even warmer Tuesday, windy back to the low 80s.
It's 51 at our studios.
The Todd Alba Show.
Matt Flynn joining us. This is a text off the text line. Quote, I'm dreading that it's a little too late. The last few weeks of polls are extremely bleak.
This is not the time to get wobbly. The polls right now still show her in the lead between 2 to 3 points. She used to be ahead by 5 points. So what?
Charles Franklin at Marquette Law School says polls don't vote. People do. Have a plan. Be a voter, Matt.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Christina Reynolds of Emily's List. Donald Trump had a quasi-town hall.
There were two questions, one on abortion and one on IVF. What he did was claim he just wanted the states to get to decide, and it is a lie. When they call it a national minimum standard, they are saying we want the federal government to get to decide and not you.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail, and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Todd Alba joins us. Hey, Todd.
We're here in front of the Bonham Theater to talk entertainment. Todd forgot his battery pack. We are running off of Todd's truck engine.
I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but if your travel budget got cut, I'm just wondering if it coincided. All of a sudden, I got like a 10 grand a week per diem. I don't know if that is related.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, folks, I'm Charlie Behrens. This is Civic Media, and here's my conversation with UW professor Mike Wagner all about the 2024 election.
It's a bro election. Have you guys heard that? No? Okay. Well, it's what they're saying. Many people are saying the bros are going to decide this election.
Who makes better decisions than young white men? Honestly.
What's so funny?
As an old white guy, I don't mind.
Well, what is the deal with the bro vote? Like,
well, there's a couple things happening, I think, that are really interesting. One of which is, and I see this on our campus, and I see this when I talk to my friends who are teaching students around the country, younger men are increasingly disaffected from the political system, right? They recognize, okay, most people in power look a lot like me, and that's probably not good, that's probably not fair, that's not equitable. But I don't want to have to pay for the sins of the previous generations. I would like to have a chance to go to college and be successful. And then at the same time, there are places that will tell them, you know, it's not really your fault if things are going bad for you. It's really the fault of, and then maybe it's Kamala Harris, or maybe it's women, or maybe it's the liberal media, or they'll just kind of give a boogeyman. And there are places where younger men are more inclined to get information, which coming in the form of podcasts, that are kind of appealing to a lifestyle that's a little political, but it's mostly other things. Like Joe Rogan's podcast, as an example, is extremely popular, and it's a lot about ultimate fighting and fitness and nutrition and comedy and, you know, breaking up your friends and, you know, making fun of them and having them make fun of you and all these kind of things. And then there's some politics, and then there's also, like, you know, a sprinkle of bizarre misinformation. And so the sprinkle of bizarre misinformation gets in there along with all of the other things that aren't really about politics. And so it's where people get their information makes a difference, and their increasing disaffection with the political system makes a difference. Younger men are among the least likely groups to think that what our leaders do will make their lives better in any appreciable way.
So, and actually, when you're talking about the podcast, you know, I don't know who listened to a podcast, guys. But you are seeing that people are, a lot of the presidential candidates in this run, they're coming on podcasts as opposed to talking to the media, the traditional media.
That's right.
And so we're seeing this sort of truth and just standard journalist practices are kind of like not getting the spotlight. And what is getting the spotlight is podcast stuff.
Sure.
What is that doing to democracy, you think?
Well, I don't know that it's great for democracy, but I also think that there are some reasonable reasons that folks who listen to these podcasts have for wanting the hosts of these programs to vouch for candidates. Younger people have lived in a society that's been deeply polarized their whole lives. There's been kind of constant wars. There have been huge economic crashes. They see an intractable Congress where people cannot get along. And they're looking for leaders who they believe are authentic. And one thing that a lot of folks who host podcasts really prize is being real, being authentic. That's the really famous female skewed podcast Kamala Harris went on. That's the case with the Joe Rogan experience. People view the hosts as authentic. Like the whole, you know, Kamala's brat, she's real, right? She's authentic. And that is a useful thing to know about our leaders. It's less useful to know than are you competent? What are your ideas? How do you make decisions under pressure? You know, those are things we really want to know about our leaders, and we don't learn them from podcasts.
Well, and you're a journalism guy, so how does journalism find its way in this media that seems to care less and less about journalism?
Yeah, short of publicly funded journalism that would solve a lot of the economic problems in the economic model, I think journalists probably, you know, it's hard to, I don't want to speak about them in mass. Lots of reporters are doing really good investigative work and doing really really kind of heroic local news trying to cover local issues and also happens to be the sources that people trust the most. So there's lots of good things happening in journalism. But it's also the case that most newsrooms are getting smaller by the day. Newspapers are closing down. We're losing the kind of information that binds us together civically. Not all the stuff in the paper is about politics. It's about movies and shows like this and community events. And when we lose those things, we start to make it, it's easier for us to see what divides us and harder to see what unites us. And so journalists, I think, need to find a way back to being trusted sources of information. And it probably comes from being more fearless when it comes to just saying, these things these folks are saying are not true, and they will be upset, and they will threaten us, and we will continue to say that these things are not true when they're not true.
Yeah, because when you have a presidential candidate not go on, I mean, Harris was not doing interviews for a long time leading up, which I think that was problematic. And then Trump is, you know, he like turns down 60 Minutes talking because they're going to fact check him. But that is like, that's the whole point, dude, you know? Like, otherwise do a rally, you know? But why is that, like, that's just accepted by us? It's like, okay, he doesn't want to get fact-checked. Even in the debates, they don't want to get fact-checked. But, like, wouldn't a debate be way better if there was, like, a bullshit buzzer, you know?
It would be fantastic. It's like,
you know? And that's who won the debate. The guy who got the less amount of bullshit buzzers, you know?
That would be a way better model than what we have now, honestly.
Let's do it.
I'm in.
You know? What?
You should host it.
Yeah, I'm going to start making my bullshit buzzer. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I want to keep going on to a few different topics. One thing I thought that was really interesting, you guys heard my whole rant on artificial intelligence. Not one question about artificial intelligence in the debate, but artificial intelligence is a thing that's already driving society. It's already probably driving these wedges between us largely, because that AI is in your algorithm, so it shows you more of what you already see. That's how people go down the rabbit hole, as I've gone down the AI rabbit hole. And then not just that, it's the workforce. You know, you see these robots coming on, that's going to deplete the workforce in just the coming years, you know? And nobody's talking about from the workforce standpoint, from the environmental standpoint. You had Google that was saying, hey, we are going to be carbon neutral by, I think, 2030. And then AI came along and they're like, yeah, that's not happening. Because all these AI things take so much energy that they Microsoft is reopening Three Mile Island, right? Which, do you guys remember that from history class? Something bad happened there. I think it melted down. But they're going to give it another go. And you know, so environmentally, what would make sense is to take AI and say, all right, AI, help us fix the environment like ASAP before we like burn ourselves out of this planet. But instead we're saying like, let's let this robot water your plants. I can water my friggin' plants. Actually, I can't. I've killed many plants, guys. I have one living plant. It's a rubber plant. It doesn't need to be watered. But so many issues. And then I'm going to throw one more at you. Just answer the whole thing. China's looking at Taiwan. Taiwan's got all the semiconductors. Everything that makes AI is in Taiwan. And China's like right across the drink going, we are going to get these sons of bitches real soon. And that's going to happen. And we're distracted with two other huge conflicts. And I think China's going to be like, all right, now that they got all their Navy over here and this over in Russia, we're going to go take Taiwan. That's what I think is going to happen. But after that long-winded, rambling kind of question, what do you have to say for yourself?
I'm sorry, Charlie. I can't answer that. No. It's so complicated, right? I mean, you know, in the amount of time it takes you to say to ChatGPT, write me an essay for my Journalism 200 class, when it gives you the response, that's taken more water than was in my beer, right? You know, and so, like, that's just one thing, one time, not what's fueling these algorithms on social media or fueling the chatbots. When you want to talk, human being, please. I want to help you get your ticket on Delta. Human being, please. What's your flight number? I need to talk to a person. You know, like, and they just, you know, and these things are happening constantly, right? And it's happening in an environment where the moneyed powers that be want this revolution because it'll mean fewer people they have to pay, right? It'll mean fewer workers. And that's a real issue. We haven't heard anybody really on the campaign trail talk about that because they, as you say, really haven't been asked very much about it. We don't know very much about the ethics of AI as a society. There are lots of people who study this and care about it, but most of us haven't thought about what happens when the algorithm or the artificial intelligence disagrees with what we want it to do as its programmer and creator. These are all open questions that we just don't know the answer to. But AI is already a huge part of our lives, from the stuff that we get on our, the stuff that we see on our social media feed, to the chat relationships we have, to when Google completes what it is you're searching for. Like, all these things are algorithmically trying to figure out how to best serve us from one point of view, which is to keep our attention, right? It's a best service, like you were saying before, like the doom scrolling, right? It's wanting to keep you on the platform, wanting to keep us not doing other kinds of things. There's not a great answer to this that we've heard from any of the people who represent us, and there certainly haven't been great answers from those who are running the companies that are doing these things.
And the thing about technology, it increases exponentially. So you guys might be on ChatGPT, and you're like, write me this thing, and it kind of sucks, or it's like not quite there. But like in 6 months, the way technology rises, it's just going to be exponentially better. Which isn't just like a little bit better, it's like way better. So in a very, very short period of time, we're going to turn around and it's all going to be there. I think that's very hard because the people who are supposed to be regulating it, it's Congress, and they're way, I mean, you just listen to those talks they had about social media. If you go back and you look at any of those congressional talks they had, it's like, oh man, we are so far from Kansas right now. Like, these guys are not even close to understanding what's going on.
They don't get what's happening, and they don't understand how good AI is at learning. And so, like, there's this really cool story that came out in the last week or so at the Washington Post, where if you were looking at it online, you could interact with it, and it would play you a clip from Donald Trump that was real and a clip that was AI. And it asked you, could you pick which one? And there are some things AI doesn't do well. AI doesn't stutter, right? So when people stutter in conversation, AI doesn't do that yet, but it's going to learn to do that to sound more natural. And so the things that we can do now to say, oh, that's an AI clip, not a real one, we're not going to be able to do in a year or 2 years.
Interesting. Yeah, and you're not going to be able to figure it out. And these robots are already taking jobs in warehouses. I feel like you're going to have a hollowing out of the middle class. I mean, is there anything that people in this audience can realistically do to at least raise issues for that? Like, if people are feeling hopeless about it, like, what can they do that's productive?
Well, I think they can demand that their lawmakers take this issue up, at least, and decide to talk about what kinds of protections might be in place for workers who are at risk for being, displaced, or which is a fancy way of saying fired, by AI, right? There's probably some things that workers themselves can do to organize and try to get their management to find ways to protect them, to retrain them, to find ways to still be productive. You know, I do a lot of flying for my job, and so I'll go and, you know, give a talk at a university or do research or something, and I've just noticed you can not have to talk to a human to get food at the airport anymore, which wasn't the case 2 years ago in most of the country. And so now you press a couple of buttons at the McDonald's and it all comes out and you never see a person. Like, these things are happening, as you say. It's hollowing out the middle class. It's hollowing out people who are also participating in the gig economy to try to find other ways to make ends meet.
I could keep diving down this rabbit hole for a long time, but I want to keep going a little bit. Let's talk about third-party candidates. We've got on Wisconsin, I think RFK is on the ballot. Jill Stein is on the ballot. RFK has dropped out. Jill Stein says she's not dropping out, and she's actually made a lot of ground in the Midwest, specifically Michigan, where there's a very large Arab American population, who is obviously not happy that we are just giving Netanyahu kind of a blank check for bombs. And so it's sort of, you can see how you can lose Michigan real quick. That's 200,000-300,000 votes. Biden won by, I think, 150,000 or something in the last election. It's going to be very tight. So, and a lot of those folks are going the way of Jill Stein. But you also have Trump, who's been very clear that he will support Israel 110%, you know, whatever. So it's probably going to be worse with Trump. And yet you can't ignore what's been happening over the past year with respect to a terrible thing happened, so awful what happened to Israel. But Israel's response, if you look at the number of dead people, has been exponentially higher. So it's hard for people to navigate this. But what's your thought in terms of third-party candidates?
Third-party candidates usually do best when there's one issue that they can kind of corner the market on, so to speak, and an issue that is to the extreme side of the candidate from one of the two major parties. So Ralph Nader and then the environment as an example in 2000, Jill Stein talking about this issue, you know, in 2024. And so trying to find a way to siphon off enough voters from one side to be able to continue getting on the ballot in the future and can maybe try to do some things that can help the Green Party build itself. But yeah, it has the functional, pragmatic outcome of hurting the Harris campaign without question. Whereas like the RFK one is, you know, that seemed to be kind of pulling roughly equally, maybe a little bit more from Trump supporters. Again, neither of these folks are getting a lot of votes, but Wisconsin was decided by just over 20,000 votes in the last presidential election. And so changing that many people's minds over one thing when the functional difference between the two candidates isn't enormous seems like a strange choice.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to one of my buddies, he's Syrian, and he, obviously, the Middle East is a huge issue for him, and he was saying he wants to vote Jill Stein because if she gets 5% of the votes, then they get funding, the third party gets funding the next go-round. That's sort of that logic. What can you explain what that is for people who don't understand?
Yeah, it's hard to get on the ballot. The two major parties make it hard for third parties to get on the ballot because in a society where one more vote than the other side wins everything, the incentive is to make it so that there are two parties on the ballot, which maximizes your chances of getting one more vote than the other side. And so they really want to make it hard in general for third parties to get on the ballot. And then they're selective about that philosophy when there's a third party candidate that might pull from the other side in a particular state or in a particular race. The Green Party wants to get that funding. It's super unlikely to happen, but that seems to be among their goals.
With all these issues going on around the world, especially the conflicts, you know, in Ukraine and Russia and, you know, Israel, all that, like there's so much information and misinformation. And that's really actually something that travels across all these issues where you can be like super on one side of it and find yourself down the rabbit hole. And how could anyone think the other way? And I think just for people out there who are trying to like get a balanced view of what's going on, how can people have like a healthy media diet?
Yeah, I think the first thing I think people need to try and do is become more familiar with the phrase, I don't know. We're so certain about so many things, and much of the world is uncertain, and much of the predictions that politicians we like and politicians we dislike make are guesses at best. And so part of what needs to happen is I think we need to be more open to the idea that we might not know everything. We might be wrong about some things. And in the research into this, this is one of the things I study. People who are willing to admit they don't know are way more likely to learn things from the news media and come to believe more things that are verifiably true. People who are really knowledgeable but have a really low trust for the news are the most likely to believe in conspiracy theories because they have enough knowledge to be able to spin stories for why the thing that happened should not have happened to their side. And so we need to find a range of sources that aren't just telling us our side is great and the other side is the devil. I think it's one thing we can do. Another thing is to try to talk to people who are a little bit different than us politically. In Wisconsin, when I moved here in 2012, one in three of us had stopped talking politics, but would talk about other things with our friends. And in 2022, when we repeated that survey around the midterm elections, it was 60% who'd stopped talking politics. And it was 20% who just cut people out of their lives altogether. And so they're just saying, we disagree, you're out. And, you know, sometimes that's reasonable. Like if you say, you know, if you said to me, you know, you're a professor and you're hell-bent on indoctrinating my students and you shouldn't be able to live and I can't wait for your house to burn down. Yeah, maybe I cut you out of my life and that's reasonable. But if you say,
cut your uncle out of your life?
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing?
But if you say to me, I disagree about tax policy, we disagree about AI policy, we disagree about the environment, but we can still be friends. You know, too many of us are turning our backs on folks who disagree with us, but aren't impugning our right to live as a citizen or those sorts of things. And so I think we need to talk to people who are different than us. We need to seek out sources that do more than just tell us that we're right and the other side's wrong.
Got it. Yeah, give him a big round of applause for that. At this point, I know I said I'd wait if any of you guys had questions. I didn't see anyone have questions. Does anyone have questions that they want to throw out there real quick? It's nice and dark. No one will see. Yeah, sir. Go ahead. Hang on. And then Colleen's got a microphone around there somewhere. She can come to you, too.
I can.
What's
do
your
it.
Name? Where are you from?
I'm Terry. I'm from Cottage Grove.
Oh, beautiful.
Originally from Iowa.
Good for you. Yeah.
Student loans. We talk about forgiveness and it polarizes people and all that. Why? How come nobody says, let's just move it to 1% interest rate?
1% interest rate on the... Or 0% interest rate.
These are other solutions that our leaders would be free to propose, right? And what we don't see that sort of thing happening. Yeah, that's... I'm not sure why that is. Probably because the... But I think the calculation would be... If we can forgive the loans for those who want them forgiven, then that's going to really make the folks who got them forgiven happy and continue to vote for us. And it'll probably have a bunch of other ancillary benefits that they'll spend money on things that aren't student loans anymore, probably local businesses and or Amazon, if we're being honest, right? But then if you don't want to do it, then like you're exacerbating this problem, making it more and more expensive to go to college and making it harder and harder for people to ever get, you know, making ends meet. So like, you know, there are these pragmatic middle of the road things that don't have the juice that they had in the 70s and 80s and even early 90s.
And that's because as soon as you said percentage, I heard like five people fall asleep, you know, because like anything involving numbers, it's better to talk about the cats and the dogs. I really got to work on my impression. But
we got one right here.
That's a great question. Thank you very much for that.
Hey, can you hear me? We got one right here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm Chris from Waterloo. Could you speak?
Hey,
could
you Chris, speak? Waterloo.
Could you speak about the amendment to the Constitution?
The amendment to the Constitution? Which one are we talking about there?
In Wisconsin.
There's
Wisconsin.
A few of them, I think.
The proposed amendment, I'm sorry, about the change in the one word.
I'm not a legal expert, so I should probably just stop talking there, but I won't.
Where the hell's our legal scholar at? Are you the legal scholar? Yeah, yeah. Are you involved in legal? Come on up here. Answer this damn question. Yeah, there we go.
Thank you. All right. It is illegal for non-citizens to vote in federal and state elections in the United States and in every state in the United States. That has not always been the case. If you go back to statehood here in Wisconsin, almost no one who lived here was a United States citizen. And so what you needed to do to vote was you needed to say, I intend to become a citizen. And you could vote in Wisconsin elections. A long time ago, like a century ago, we changed that. And so the Wisconsin Constitution now says everyone in the state of Wisconsin who is a citizen is eligible to vote. The proposed amendment would change that. So instead of saying everyone who is a citizen is entitled to vote, it would say only citizens are entitled to vote. But as I already said, it is already illegal for non-citizens to vote. And think about this, right? 3.3 million people just in the state of Wisconsin voted in 2020 in the presidential election. So the benefit, if you are not legally in this country, of trying to vote is extremely slim. We have close elections. We don't very often have elections decided by one vote. The penalties are immense. So as Mike said, this is really a solution in search of a problem. We don't have a problem. No one can show that there are non-citizens voting in Wisconsin. No one can show that there are non-citizens really voting anywhere in the country. And this is really just another political talking point.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thank you very much. Well, that's all the time we have for now, folks. But if you want to listen to my full conversation with Mike Wagner, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No. Gotta keep her moving.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we'll take a closer look at Tucker Carlson's Daddy Trump speech.
Is there ever an end to the stories in Idiocracy?
No.
Tune in.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally. This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.